Hi guys, welcome back to the One Broke Actress podcast, an honest account of actor life plus a few lessons I learn in the process. This is Sam Valentine, your host, bringing you episode 4 of season 5. That's right, here we are, back in Hollywood, recording, and just in time, a plane decides to fly circling around our house. So if you're hearing that on your noise quality, well, she's one broke actress, she can't afford a sound booth. Speaking of acting stuff, I got to meet a couple of you guys this week at the We Audition meetup at the Grove on Wednesday, and it was so nice. Thank you guys so much for coming and introducing yourselves. I know a couple people said they saw me but didn't recognize me because I changed my look completely over the past week. Yeah. By the way, that new article is now up on One Broke Actress, all about why I looked different at that event / why I rebranded my whole self. Anyway, if you want to read that, you can find it. But thank you guys so much for coming. It was so nice to meet you. And speaking of We Audition, today's podcast is brought to you by We Audition. They had an awesome meetup. They're doing really cool things with really cool people all around the industry and not just actors. They were very big participants in the Artios Awards, and you guys should check them out and use code BROKE25 for a $7.50 a month membership. I know you've heard about them by now because you're listening to episode 4, so you've heard me say it. Join them. Join me. Come, let's read some sides. All right, guys, moving right along. Thank you guys so much for last week's reviews. We didn't get any new reviews this week, which is like kind of a bummer. I would love to get 3 reviews this week. Just 3, nothing else. You don't have to share this podcast on Instagram. You don't have to follow me or anything like that. You just need to review this podcast. Click 5 stars, or if you don't want to click 5 stars, write me an email instead and I'll take the, you know, that brutal beating a little bit better over email. Click it, write a review, 3 more and we'll be over 100. What? That would feel really good. Can you guys please help me? It would just, I mean, they just make me so happy and they really make me want to do more extra bonus episodes when I get more reviews. So 3 more episodes, we're going to be over 100. Okay, this week's guest. I'm laughing already. Sarah Burns is fucking hilarious. Probably 2/3 of this episode is satire and the two of us just bantering back and forth in some sarcastic manner. You guys are going to love Sarah Burns. You've probably seen her recently as her reoccurring series regular of Detective May and Barry. You probably saw her in I Love You, Man. You probably saw her in the Wet Hot American Summer reboot. You probably saw her in Enlightened. Sarah is a really, really awesome mother. She's a working actress. She is a former UCB student. She is an improver. She is fucking awesome. She grew up in Long Island, and she's going to tell us all about what she thought her career was going to look like, and then how having one line in a play in high school and then seeing some Broadway brought her fully into her acting career. She shares with us how one guest star on Flight of the Conchords matched her up with casting directors who got to know her, which eventually led to her booking her biggest early on role in the movie I Love You, Man. She stands by it to this day that those relationships got her where she is, and you guys need to hear these stories. She also talks about what happens after something like that happens, where you film a movie and then you're just sitting around waiting for it to come out when you don't know like when or if it will come out, and how to use your time constructively, how she first moved to LA and used it constructively. I mean, she didn't even have agents when she booked that movie. That's so crazy. We talk a lot about imposter syndrome, and we joke about it, but it's very real, and I think we should talk about it a hell of a lot more. And also what it's like to be an actor and parent. Sarah has a daughter, and she speaks very highly of her. It's so funny, you guys. You're going to love this episode. So without further ado, please enjoy Sarah Burns. I want you to tell me where you grew up,
okay,
and then what you thought your career would look like. From
my acting career?
Yeah.
I grew up on Long Island, okay, in a town called Rockville Center. And the most noteworthy citizens of Rockville Center were, I forgot her name, and she has a bigger title than wife, but she was married to Bob Newhart, and she lived across, she apparently grew up in the house across the street from mine. And for a while, it was rumored that Joan Jett lived in Rockville Center. And I saw her once. She was wearing red Reebok high tops. and I stood next to her on the street. It was very exciting. And June Raphael also grew up there. But that's Rockville Center. Okay. I thought that I would be like a wildly successful film star.
Great.
And like wouldn't really do television. And I thought that by now I would have a giant house with a pool. And I also thought at one point in my life that I would make $10,000 a year. that was like, I remember being in like in high school. I had no designs on being an actress at this point, but I didn't know what I was going to do. And my teacher asked the class, how much money do you guys want to make a year? And I was like, $10,000 a year.
Oh my God, I love that you were going to buy a house with $10,000
with
a
pool.
That's with a pool.
I mean, maybe that might have been like a year and a half worth of my salaries put together for that, but I had no concept of like, I don't know. It's very like typical of me though to like set out, get out there, wait. Well, I haven't prepared for anything. I don't have a coat. I'm buying a house with a pool and I have $10,000 to my name. But
wait, so what, you in high school, you didn't think you were going to be an actress?
No, I don't know what I thought I would be. Probably a tragic character because I was very goth and very...
Were you?
But like cheerful. I was a cheery goth. But I was, you know, like lying in my bedroom in the dark listening to string music and Sisters of Mercy.
Like a classical goth.
Yeah, well, just if it was sad and like would I'd like listen to it on repeat. I was contemplating how difficult it was to be a teenager on Long Island, but I didn't want to be an actress because I feel badly saying this now, but I didn't really like the drama club. I thought they were all very like big. There wasn't really a drama club in my, I don't think there was a drama club in the high school that I ended up, I went to three different high schools.
Really?
Yeah, I went to one and my parents took me out because I wasn't like a remarkable, I wasn't fucking up and I wasn't brilliant, and so I was just like in the middle and I didn't really play sports, and so they put me into a really good school and that school closed, and so I ended up in like another school that like everyone else just kind of gravitated towards.
Okay. I bet they had a drama club and you just didn't know it existed.
Well, they
I feel like that's so much of what high school drama clubs are.
Yeah they probably, well, the third high school that I went to, I don't remember if there were, but the second high school I went to St. Paul's on Long Island, which is so cool because there was graffiti on the walls from the turn of the last century. And F. Scott Fitzgerald had written about the school, and it was this old Gothic, so it was perfect because it was perfect. And then there was fall, and I was wearing headphones, and again, Sisters of Mercy, and
like a hoodie up over your headphones.
Yeah, just walking around after school, listening to Christian Death. But there was a drama school. There was like a drama program there, and I had one line in a play. I played Gymnasia from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and it catapulted me to stardom.
And here we are.
And here we are. And I haven't worked since, but it's just great. It's great.
I heard about that actually. Yeah, I brought you on.
It's pretty good.
So did you decide to go study, like what, how did you get into acting then if it was the one line in high school and like your just ideal life was the $10,000, like how did we get here?
I realized that was not going to cut it. No, I had wanted to do it as a little kid and my mother introduced me to like a manager, but then she saw the culture around like child actors and she was like, no. And then I got approached once after like a fur protest when I was in high school by a guy who wanted to take photographs of me. My mother was like, that just sounds like predatory behavior and no. So that was off the table. And so I didn't think about it. And then I saw Cabaret on Broadway and Alan Cummings was the MC. And I was like so in love with him. And he was like my face is getting tight as I'm telling you this because I'm like so excited. I could see him breathing on stage, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. Like he was so alive, and he was having so much fun, and he was so sexy to me, and he was just he was so amused, and he was. That was the moment where I was like, I want that. And that's kind of what I was pissed too, because I took my boyfriend and I at the time to the show, and he was like, pfft. And I was like, do not see what's going on. I'm a member of the theater. But, and then I saw Bottle Rocket a couple years later or somewhere around the time. And I was like, I want to make films like that. Mm. And I started taking an acting class, in Soho at this place called Performance of a Lifetime. The first class was free, and I was like, that's within my budget. and then I was just hooked. Like, and the teacher who taught us was also an actor, and we would go see him do a play, and it was like watching, you know, Marlon Brando live. You know, it was so exciting. Am I going too far?
No.
Okay. 6 hours from now, you'll be like, Jesus Christ, there's one question.
We'll both be towed by from Home Depot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to buy gardening gloves.
Oh, great.
So that way, if they do try to tow my car, I'll be like, what are you talking about? Anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's.
I've just been in the plant aisle.
What? I really had to make the right purchase.
If you guys are listening to this, we had to park at Home Depot because this is very hard to park.
It's a very busy neighborhood. But we will pay it. Forward or backward by buying gardening gloves.
And they have a lot of my money.
Lumber. Yeah. Yeah. I spend enough time. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
They're making at least $10,000 a year.
But they have a pool.
They do. These fucking jerks. I'm glad you said that it was acceptable to curse.
Absolutely.
Shit, fuck asshole. And,
So you started getting inspired. You took an acting class.
Yes.
Were you done with school by then?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't take advantage of any of the programs that's in college.
What were you going to college for?
Photography. See, this is like a theme in my life. The rule of threes in my life. I started in photography, and then I changed to art, like fine art, and then I... with an emphasis in printmaking, and then I ended up getting my degree in writing.
Oh, okay.
Because I kind of thought, oh, you know, I love to write, and I would be a writer. And then I realized when I started pursuing acting, I thought, I want to be a writer. I want to be an actress. I want to be a writer. And then I thought, you have to make a choice and put your effort in one direction now so that you can move forward. That's whether that's right or not, I don't know. But for me, I was like, just put all of your organically farmed eggs into one basket. And I wasn't that disgustingly annoying at that point, but I was like, put all your eggs in one basket and just like follow through for a bit. And that's why I thought, like, if I could just focus on one thing instead of getting kind of split, I would become the world famous top grossing actress of all time that I
Sick.
Am.
Great. Success has worked.
Yeah.
So why didn't you stay in New York for acting then? Why are you here?
I stayed in New York as long as I possibly could. Okay. I moved here in 2011 because I started, and I would probably still be there if I could, because I miss New York is like my first love. Matt Lutz and New York City were my first loves, but my work was here and I needed to be here, and it was hard to be in New York City and, like, you know, you could have an audition and flying here and then finding places to stay. And just, I was on a TV show at the time and we were going for season two, and it was just like the time. And then I got canceled.
What show was it?
Enlightened, on HBO, Laura Dern, written by Mike White. And that was what finally was made me move.
Okay.
I
have a question.
Oh, yeah.
So back in the day when we pictured the career and had, Dane to do TV, right? It's okay. I used to say that about commercials. I'm like, I guess I would take one. I beg for one.
Oh, God. I know. Now you're like, can I come in and audition?
cottage. Get the hell out of here.
I would love to read for car accident victim in the Safe Farm Insurance yes. commercial. So did you, how did you go about finding reps in New York and then getting into television? And when you first started, did you still kind of have that same opinion about TV?
No, because I was, it's weird. No, I had that opinion about, it's weird. So much of my life I forget because I'm so in my head all the time. And I think I'm just like, and it's almost like I push all the neuroses from the past out and make room for new ones. So a lot of stuff, it's just like dark holes. But, and I drink very heavily. So much of it is probably done in like blanked out.
My entire college career.
Yeah, but I don't think so. After I took classes at Performance of a Lifetime, I went and started taking classes at this other school. I think it was called the School for Film and Television. And then I did an improv class, and someone was like, you should check out the UCB Theater. And then in 2001, I went to the UCB Theater, and that's when it got, like, I got very serious about what I wanted, and I wanted comedy, and I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live, which was like the goal that we all kind of feel like a lot of people are, maybe it's different now, but then it was, you know, Amy Poehler was one of the founding members, so
right.
if you take a class at the UCB Theater, you probably end up on SNL, and just have to bide your time until that happens. And so around that,
it's still like that there.
It is. You just honestly,
I feel like. Do
no, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I was like, wait, are you still there?
No, when I moved to Los Angeles, kind of around the time, around like 2008, I came out here to do a movie, and I told the artistic director that I'd probably be unable to do Harold Knight for a couple of weeks, thinking that the film would take a few weeks to shoot. This is blind, ignorant fool that I am, army crawling through the dark of my career. He's like, I think you're going to be there for a while. And then, so I gave up my position on the Harold team.
Okay.
I think around then.
Okay.
Or maybe. And then when I moved out here in 2011, I think at that point I'd kind of slowly had stopped performing in New York City regularly, and then here it was very infrequent, and I just had different pursuits out here
mm-hmm.
and became lazy and didn't want to go out at night.
Well, because it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Going out's terrible.
It's like being in this like apocalyptic landscape and you're like, it's not safe because it's not my couch.
Also streaming started, and then like, what are you going to do? Leave your house? So do you feel like UCB informed a lot of like the direction you took with your career?
It did. Well, because people were so focused on their careers, you could watch people succeeding, and you know, all the mythology of people's success was talked about and dissected, and like and then, you know, there was a layer of competitiveness too. And
yeah, so was it encouraged, or did it feel, you know, sometimes when you see your friends get successful, you're like, cool, like we're all going to be in on this. Or was it kind of like that comparison feeling?
It's weird. I feel like I had a pretty good or lucky run because I advanced at like a nice pace for my comfort level. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't feel like, damn it. A lot of times I'd see people move ahead of me, but I always thought, oh, that's okay, because I'm in tandem with them. If they're two steps further along, I'm two steps further along in mine. And so I kept that. But
so you're pretty good at staying in your own lane.
I guess.
Yeah.
But don't think like I haven't been like, I'm with that shit myself. You know, there have been moments where I've had to like center myself quietly and be like, your time will come. It's cool. But I think that is what keeps you motivated. I think the UCB was so great because you're around other people who wanted it. They would be like, oh, I did this and X, and you'd be like, oh, I got to do this. And then there were constant opportunities for us to showcase our work. So, like, we were treated like serious people, and we had access to a lot of stuff, and you wrote your own stuff, or you had access. Someone had access to a camera and was shooting. Like, I did one or two things with Ben Schwartz, and like Nick Kroll and John Mulaney. One of my first jobs, quote unquote jobs, that I did after I left my day job to pursue acting full time, was a short with that Nick and John had written, and I seriously was like, oh, this is what it's gonna be like. And
John Mulaney is one of my favorite comedians.
Oh, he's so great. He's so great. And he and Nick both, they're so great, and the success that they've achieved is so well deserved and so hard. Like, so it's just, you see people, they deserve that shining light on them, because
I love to hear that.
They were rad, and they had like vision and forethought, I think, to make these films. And they weren't, the stuff that they did wasn't stuff you'd seen. It wasn't like people like jump, I don't want to make fun of people's creative endeavors, but like, you know, like it was cool to be a part of. And I think you wouldn't get that if you were just like striking out on your own.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to pick up a camera and be like, because I didn't have a camera. I might have even had a camera, but I probably didn't pick it up. Who knows? That my house is a mess. But
it's the organization of all the moving parts to get it accomplished. I always want to be a part of a machine, but I don't want to be the machine.
Exactly. I think, but that's why when you're in a community, there's someone who's going to be, someone wants to write it, someone wants to produce it, someone wants to direct it, someone wants to shoot it.
Yeah.
And I want to act in it. And I don't even, I mean, never say never, but like, I don't really have designs on like directing things. Mm-hmm. I have designs on like creating and writing and producing things, but not telling other people like, you're very upset. Your water supply is dwindling and your three children are thirsty. You know, like, I don't know that I could motivate another person to do that, but but so they were great. And then there's the, you know, thousands of other people that created things and did things. And I worked on this thing called My Wife the Ghost, and it was created by Dinah Moe, who's this awesome artist, and her partner, a writing partner, Kirk, and Eugene Cordero was in it with me. And he's in Kong, Skull Island. Like, it's so cool. It's really rad, because you're watching these people that, like, we were all just, okay, well, you want me to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning and shoot a video for nothing, but you'll give me lunch? Oh my God, they're going to give me lunch. And then, you know, you're on, like, in a theater, and there's your friend, and he's battling King Kong. It's so cool. It's so neat.
That's the ride, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the, I think that's the funnest part, is to just go through, to go from somewhere to somewhere else.
That's
a very vague description of that process. Do you know what I mean? Like you have somewhere to look back on, which is cool. Do you feel like when you, what was your first thing that you were like, oh, this is important, and it actually was? Like, that felt like it took your career to the next level.
I booked a show, exactly, I know exactly what that is. I booked a part on Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, yeah.
This is better water choice.
I'm a big Best Friends Animal Society fan.
Yeah, I love them. They're so good. Nice. Best Friends Animal Society, giving them a shout out.
She has a water bottle to complete the picture.
Earlier faux pas that I made with the Dasani bottle that I picked up at an ADR studio. I booked that show, and that switched things for me.
Yeah.
Like that.
What was the role?
I played, what was my name?
I can never remember characters' names.
They're always a variant of like, and I love them, but there are moments, I shouldn't say this out loud. There are moments when you, especially during pilot season, you go out and you're like, who am I going out for? Because there's so many names in your head.
They're like, please state your name and your role. And I'm like,
Well, I know my name begins with an S, and I believe I'm here for the role of Mr. Willier?
Nope. Usually I'm there for someone named Lucy.
Yeah, that's Harper. Like
Some basic name.
I want like a sexy name, like Theta. You know. but no. Not for me.
Was it a reoccurring? Was it?
It was one episode, and I played like one of these like flirty girls who kind of flirts with the guys, and then my friend and I make out, and the guys are like, "Whoa!" And Kristen Schaal's character is like, "Excuse me, I'm the biggest fan. You need to be-" Oh, it was called, the episode was called New Fans.
Okay,
And then we get them to take acid and like go on a trip and.
It was on one episode.
Yeah, it was such a blast too. They're nice guys, and so cool. I mean, I haven't seen them in 1,000 years, but that was just fun. I think it was the first season of their television show, and
Wow. And
it felt like it made me like legitimate.
Yeah,
and I don't know that I had a manager at the time or representation.
How'd you get the audition?
The woman who cast it. So I skipped a bit.
Okay.
I also, for a while I was at the UCB Theater, I worked at a school called, I think this was called the School for Film and
as like a side job?
Yeah. It was called TVI Actors Studio.
Okay.
And they held classes, and the classes were taught by casting directors in New York City, and they have one here, maybe still, I don't know. And they held these seminars where you could pay for like an hour or two to hear from a casting director or an agent, and then audition. They would give you like, it wasn't an audition per se, but it was essentially like an introduction.
Okay.
And then you would audition, and they could critique you on your audition.
That was kind of like a workshop.
Yeah. I mean, for some reason, it seemed to skirt the legality of paying for an audition.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like an audition because I'd never, but I then would have, I felt I would then, if I blanketed their office with postcards, I'm doing an improv show, I just got a call back, I've got new headshots, or whatever you tell them, I felt like maybe they'll look at it because they remembered me. And that wasn't the most like supportive environment. The other actors were kind of competitive because it wasn't like at the UCB, you'd be, you know, there are times when you could hear people laughing for you to give you, as someone else, like someone was in the audience that was looking at you because they wanted you to go out there and kill it. And like, but here it was like, sometimes there was a little competitive edge there.
There's something about like a UCB or like an acting class where you can, and they're not always like this, but I feel like you can often feel like you're creating something together in your extended careers instead of, it's like one-on-one of the casting director workshops, which I've been to many a casting director workshop and have had a few that were worth it.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like my dad's friend said this to me once, but I love it. He's like, you have to cast your net really wide because like the farther, you never know. Like, but that's truly why the oceans are being destroyed, you know, because they're
a lot of nets
out there, but If you can make sure that you're not catching fish or anything like that, but if you cast your net really wide, you never know what you're gonna pull in. So I was just like, I was trying this UCB, and then I was at the TVI, and I was there to get discount. I was working there so I could get discounts on these things, and just trying anything.
You were hustling.
And then, and I was also like working. I was temping too, and then for a while I was working in, what are they called? Bars, not bars, but like cocktail lounges, which makes zero sense. Like there is no worse match for me because there was a woman I worked with who maybe was an actress as well, and she showed up one night, it was like a Halloween, she showed up wearing a turtleneck as her entire outfit.
Interesting.
And I was wearing a thick turtleneck sweater and a thick skirt. And the manager looked at me and was like, oh, God, like, you're not making any money tonight. And I didn't. Like, there was, like, a shared contempt between me and the people I was waiting on. Like, they were like, get out of here. You look like Ruth Buzzy. You have no business serving cocktails. And I was like, I don't want to serve you cocktails. I don't care if you're drunk or sober. I just am going to wander around this bar until they let me go home.
The definition of so many jobs.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk around until someone lets me go back to my house. So that time you were just like hustling, literally doing everything. You got auditions, at least this one, from a casting director workshop?
I think so.
It's so cool.
Maybe because she also, like, a lot of the casting directors were familiar with UCB stuff and they'd come see us.
But I like that you sent postcards and things like that, because I think that kind of gets left out of conversation sometimes. It's like, I had a great audition and I booked a show. And I'm like, there's a lot of stuff between point A and point Z that we're not talking about.
Exactly. Like, you weren't the captain of Love Boat because you walked through one door. You became the captain of Love Boat because you were shown the door on many occasions. I actually relate much of my life to Love Boat situations, so prepare to be amazed. But no. Yeah, I did that. I would also, because I worked as a temp, I had access to office supplies.
And like mailing equipment?
Mm-hmm.
Like free stampage?
Yeah.
Stop it. It's funny how much that deters me from sending mail is stamps.
Oh, yeah. And also, too, like I have a number of forever stamps in my home, and I have no clue of, because what does forever mean to the post office?
I mean, you could just use them whenever you want. Right?
But I think they... their value, whether or not they stay forever, I think they're constantly changing. I don't know. This is a conspiracy I'm working on.
Do you still... You're at a level, though, you don't... like. Okay, so we're going to fast forward a little bit. So, because I really want to talk about so many things, and especially Barry, because I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you start working. Did you get reps after that?
Around that time, I worked for a while with like a manager, but then he left the management company... I then booked a big film, okay. And the woman who was casting it on the East Coast, she's a casting director named Jen Houston, who's the best. She casts like everything beautiful and awesome, and like Orange is the New Black. You know, she's such a shrewd, intelligent casting. She's great. She is close with and works with Allison Jones on the West Coast, mm-hmm. And I, if I'm remembering correctly, Jen was the East Coast, like, assist to Allison's casting, and that's how I got into Allison's office for this movie, the movie I Love You, Man, and then when that movie happened, I was like, again, blind, this is it, this is how it goes, I flew myself out here for my audition, for my callback.
Wait, you flew yourself out here?
I did, but as I was on the plane, the producers were going to fly me out. I was just on the plane.
Okay.
And I had, like...
I love that movie. This is so great.
I love that movie, too.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
And I constantly, if something's ever going wrong in my home or, like... my boyfriend Giovanni and I will always say something like, well, just tell them I'm in Love You, Man. Like, it's a running joke because the movie is just so good. I just love it.
So
it's a cute, and it was such a fun time. I truly believe that, like, I was not going to have to worry or hustle anymore. And when I flew here to audition, and then it took a couple days because I was, like, pretty unknown to get everyone to sign off on me. The night before I found out I booked it, I'd been out here for a couple days staying with friends and kind of auditioning for people and meeting people, and I was so exhausted. I fell asleep in the middle of a friend's living room. My legs were crossed, like crisscross applesauce, and I was lying backwards with my arms thrown over my head. Of course, wine had played a very prominent role in my courtship of slumber that night. I like just fell asleep and was like moved to the couch, and I woke up with my friend's cat Kiki staring down at me so disdainfully, like, you drunk. And then I walked back to my friend's house and found out I got the part, and then I could go home. And I went home and quick packed up and came back here. And when they flew me out here for the movie, they fly Actors First or Business, mm-hmm. and they flew me
thank
first.
Thank you, SAG-AFTRA.
Oh, thank you, SAG-AFTRA. But I was sitting next to a woman at one point, and she wanted to sit with her daughter, and so I swapped with her daughter, and everyone was very thankful. And the woman who wanted to sit next to her daughter took every single one of her many diamond earrings out and arranged them from large to small, and was rolling them across her table, like her snack table, uh-huh. and the flight attendant came over and was like, thanks so much for being so nice, and slipped me a full bottle of champagne. And I was like, this is Hollywood. Okay. There's diamonds. There's champagne.
Free champagne.
What
first
is
class.
Next? It's going to be a free tuna sandwich coming my way. You know, it was just
also,
like nuts.
He takes off jewelry on airplanes and just hopes that like no turbulence happens.
It just rolls them around.
What a rich person thing to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, she doesn't care. Those are her flying diamonds. She discards them. The second she gets to those ones, she spits them out.
Like contact lenses, just done.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't. Maybe it's like just a fabulously wealthy version of like hand sanitizer. You just run your hands over diamonds and
this,
then...
I hope someone puts this in like... You got to put this in like a sketch or like a piece or something. That's so funny.
Well, it's so crazy to me because... I know, I don't...
That's hilarious.
It felt to me... Like, okay, this is it. Like, I'll probably be hanging out with Angelina Jolie in, like, 5 minutes.
How bad did you want to tell people, like, I'm flying to L.A. for a film? Like,
if I had a microphone, like... Well, I also didn't want anyone to look at me because I had no idea how to be in first class. I couldn't figure out the tray. I was like, I have no diamonds. Even now, the shirt I'm... There's food on my dress. Jesus Christ.
I mean...
Yeah.
We're very similar people, I think.
just a horror film at all times.
Parking in Home Depot and hoping for the best.
Exactly. So I read somewhere once Maya Rudolph said something about like constantly feeling like an imposter, the imposter thing.
Imposter syndrome is huge.
It's crazy that someone like Maya Rudolph would think that, but like I always am like, guys, I'm like a dirty, smelly... There's this like little dirty, stinky punk rocker from when I was little and just like who didn't wash her hair and like wore the same shirt for a month and it was taped together with like electrical tape because it had a hole in it. And that person is the person who arrives to any event where everyone is glittering and fabulous and I'm wearing my glitter and my version of fabulousness. I'm that little gross teenager and I'm like, what am I doing here?
Do you think everyone feels that way though? Because I think even when I'm like super put together, quote unquote, from an exterior view, I swear, I just think I'm like, I'm either like gassy or like uncomfortable or my feet are sweating. Like something's always, I feel like everyone must feel this way and just not talk about it.
The one thing that gets me through that wall of panic is that everyone has to be, and then the ones who aren't are not interesting.
Yeah,
like if they're just like I'm was born in a Ferrari and you know like but
diamonds on planes.
Just taking my cleaning diamonds off and putting my newer diamonds on. But I think if someone doesn't have that like I'm freaking out, I wouldn't want to talk to them anyway. But it doesn't mean that I don't, oh geez, I'm such a mess, you know. I have to kind of choke past that. And then once I do,
it's like, who cares?
I guess and then there's like, they're always serving champagne at those things, so a couple glasses of that, and then you're...
I've worked a lot of like red carpet things. Like I was technically a Fiji Water Girl the year before the Fiji Water Girl came out.
Oh wow!
I know, what a missed opportunity.
Well, now you just
have to lean. So I feel like it looks so glamorous, but then when you're there it's like it's either 55 degrees and raining or it's 95 degrees and you're sweat, like it's mm-hmm. just never. And it's also, it's like a red carpet at like either downtown LA or Hollywood Boulevard in the middle of the afternoon. It's like 3 p.m like what the fuck.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I always think too, like it looks so glamorous, but then if you look closely you can see that the actors, like they're the actors, the beautiful glorious like sex scene and it's just amazing, but if you look closely you can, I guess I'm looking at the wrong stuff during these scenes, but like the actors' feet are dirty because they're walking around a filthy set and they're freezing cold or they're dry and you constantly go into your trailer and pick your nose. Like, you know, yep. It's just...
You
it's
know there's like a craft services table somewhere with a half-eaten Nutri-Grain bar. Yeah, exactly. Like, it is somewhere.
And I'm sorry about that. I don't know why I can't get the whole thing down, but...
It's just never done.
They're just so dense.
So you started... Okay, so I Love You, Man happened. When that finished filming, what do you do... When you finish a film like that, right, and it's one of your first big things, before it comes out, because sometimes it takes so long for a movie to come out, what do you do in the meantime?
Well, I stayed in Los Angeles for a couple months to kind of meet, and having booked I Love You, Man, I met with agencies and I secured an agent, cool. And that was awesome.
Yeah.
And
wait, so, did you not have an agent when you booked I Love You, Man, or was it an agent in the East Coast?
I didn't have an agent.
What the fuck? How are you defying all these rules?
I slept with a lot of people. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I did sleep with a lot of people, but that was not...
That helped your career?
Yeah, no, that was just...
Ditto.
That was life. God, so many...
Yeah, so how many did you people. Get... How did you get that I'm audition kidding. Then?
I think it was because I had auditioned for Jen Houston.
Okay.
And I've gone over it a couple times in my head, but Jen is like really loving and nurturing towards actors and actresses.
Oh, you're going to make me really want to interview her.
Oh, she's like, she's so good. I mean, she loves and she will work with you. And then and she just, she's like a film. She consumes like film and stuff like that. She knows what she's doing and she's so great. And so... And then I met, having met Allison, you know, I just remember her turning the corner as I was waiting outside her office and she was like, hello, Sarah Burns. And I was like, Allison Jones. Like, she's...
Major.
Yeah, she's just... They love and look out for actors and they know how to run... They're just great.
Yeah.
So having them kind of on my side...
Is that who cast I Love You, Man?
Allison Jones did.
Oh, okay,
but with
cool.
I think with the assist of... Jen used it. I don't know if she's credited or not. I don't know okay. if it might have just been like talking to your friend, looking yeah. for people. You work in New York. Who do you know?
Right.
And so,
right.
But after that movie, I stayed out here for a while, but was kind of like, didn't know where to go. I didn't really have a home. I was like bouncing around. And then I decided after, when I went back to Brooklyn, I made the choice to come out to LA for the fall mm-hmm. to like, do kind of like the pre-pilot season work mm-hmm. of meeting as many people as possible. And I booked an apartment at one of the Oakwood.
Oh,
it was like furnished uh-huh. actor hotels.
Is that Burbank?
Yeah. It was like on Bar. I don't
think
they
changed the name.
Yeah.
It's like the Aura now or something.
Oh, good. That's gonna change the mojo of that depressing place. Like
I hear it's like a lot of parents bring kids there to like for pilot season. I hear it's a weird vibe.
All the kids had the same cute haircut, like the Sweet Life of Zach and Cody haircut. And then there was me. And my friend visited me once and she was like, we were buying wine and like smoky nuts or something. And
there's a liquor store not far from there. So.
There's a liquor store in there.
There is?
Well, there's a store that sells liquor in there.
Oh, well, okay. This place is making a lot more sense to me now.
I mean, there's a pool, there's a gym, mm-hmm. and there's a liquor store. I don't really need much else. And it was great because I was like super focused. Mm-hmm. And but my friend visited me one night and she was like, hey, do you want her headshot on your wall? And the guy was like, no. I have no clue who this asshole is. So he wouldn't like, he didn't say that, but that's what he looked like. But so I don't know who any of those kids that were staying there, what they're up to now. They could all be president of Hollywood.
It's true. There's no rules anymore.
No. So I wish I'd paid a little more attention to who was around me, but.
I feel that way about so many situations.
Oh yeah. I'm
a bit of a mess.
I may as well just pluck my eyeballs out because I never know what's happening around me.
So you're living in LA. Were you also, did you still have a place in New York?
Yes.
Okay.
I had same place.
You were bi-coastal.
I was bi-coastal. I did it by using, I did so much research online, how to get like the best deals on rental cars, state like AAA matched with this, matched with that.
Did you, when you were out here, were you able to, did you feel like you were doing constructive things with your career? Like, I feel like it's such a special time when you first get to LA and don't have as many distractions, because it's like balls to the walls.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing else to do but audition and prep for auditions and like go to the gym.
Yeah.
I was in grand shape. And I was also getting married.
Wow.
And so by the time my wedding day came around, my wedding dress was falling off me because I was
just so thin. Just
constantly so tiny.
So you really became LA.
Snacking on only celery and the ghosts of celery. But yeah, I was so focused on, and I thought that, you know, well, if I'm not auditioning or prepping for an audition or going, you know, looking at who's on what and trying to figure out how to, but that's kind of when things, I think, started, because I did do a couple movies in the beginning, but I guess I started auditioning more for, and then like having agents kind of be a part of things and talk to you about stuff. And then I was like meeting people, and I think having little clue on like how to like be very Hollywood, I would just walk in and be Sarah Burns. And whether it was refreshing or upsetting, I think it worked in my favor because I wasn't polished. I didn't know that the thing I was wearing wasn't a tunic and shouldn't be paired with straight leg pants. Like, I just like had no clue.
I feel like that must have helped your career then, because it seems like your characters across the board have been quirky, funny, like that kind of a thing. So it's cool that your personality follows suit.
I'm not, unfortunately, this is not a put on. This is what I was doomed with.
or blessed with.
Yeah.
So how, once the movie did come out, did you feel like that changed the trajectory of your career? Do you feel like things shifted?
Yeah. Cause I started booking more, and I think it was a fun movie, and I had fun. I wasn't nervous. I didn't know that I had stuff to lose, and I love the people I worked with. They were big stars, but they weren't tools at all. They were just great and generous, and it was fun. And the director, John Hamburg, was so fun to work with, and you know, like the way his brain worked and the set he created, and it was just a good time. And I wasn't soured. Like, I didn't have a terrible experience where I was like, I don't think I can do that again. I was having a blast. It was just kind of like, ooh, where's this gonna go? And I mean, the like going to the premiere for that movie was exciting. I didn't know what to expect, and we pulled up, and one of my agents was with me at the time, and I didn't know that was like I didn't know, and I saw the line, the red carpet, and the photographers, and I almost just like ran for the hills, like. And I had to force myself. But then Jack Black pulled up, and he walked out of the car, and the people that were like lining the streets and watching the thing happen, it was like this wall of sound, and I was like, this is so exciting. It was so cool. It was cool.
Those kind of highs, I feel like, can be addictive in this career. Like, we're all a little drug addicts in that
way.
Well,
I think so too. I definitely think we're addicts, because it's like a crack high. You're chasing this like, or, you know, on your bottoms are like, oh my God, I'm never going to work again.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It feels like if you look at your career trajectory, it looks relatively steady from an outsider's perspective. Does it feel like that?
No. I'm amazed when someone I know or work with will be like, oh, you always work. I'm like, what? Oh my God. I wipe the counters in my kitchen all the time. I'm constantly like buying pants for my daughter, and like I have like got to get that car clean. I have no idea what I do with my time, but from an outside perspective, I appreciate my work though. Like, and then I feel like when I say I don't work all the time, it sounds like I'm just being like shitty and entitled.
No, I like to know that's what it feels like, because sometimes it gets really easy to feel like you're the only person who's not working, especially, and as you started to as your success started to happen, that was the rise of social media. That was the rise of the Instagram. And if you look at Instagram, it looks like everyone else is booking. And part of the reason I started this podcast, because I was like, why is everyone on set but me?
Everyone is always on set.
But it's like photos from like last December, mm-hmm. and they're crying on the floor in their bathroom. And I would rather see a photo of you crying on the floor in your bathroom.
Exactly. It's all curated. And I think it's interesting because like just this week, when we're taping this, Instagram is doing away with the likes,
yeah.
which I think will really help younger people. Because, like, I mean, I have an Instagram account, and it doesn't fill my veins. Like, it doesn't like pump my nads the way that like.
That's not like where you go to when you're feeling
yeah
under.
But it is. It is. I'm always like, holy shit, this person is always in a trailer. They're always receiving flowers, and they're always like eating these fabulous meals. And I'm, what am I do? I'm like wiping my toilet. I don't know. Yeah.
And I'm disgusting. Like, oh, I just like am sitting in my car.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm in my car more than I'm anywhere else in Los Angeles ever.
I'm watching another French mystery about a town in the Alps, which are my favorite. But
what a specific genre.
It's very crazy. I love them so much. There's like a misty, like alpine, foggy wolf show that takes place in France. I'm all in. I'm watching Zone Blanche currently. And I love it.
Something tells me that's not coming up on my feed.
I think it's like, because somebody was talking about a show the other day. I was like, I think it's just, it knows what you like and it doesn't show you certain things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know where like, all the European mysteries are. I'm like, oh, I gotta watch that next.
That is so funny.
I get so stoked.
Do you, when you are in between works, especially early on when you went from such a high, how did you get through? Because that's, I think, 90% of our job. And I struggle with what to do in between projects. I'm like, how do I stay legitimate? I have 5 jobs, so like I don't really have time to think about it. But it's hard.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, in the
you
beginning,
have a daughter.
Well, she fills my time up.
No kidding.
seriously, get. I'm gonna say, guys, get some kids. Cause
get SAG insurance and then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, the other thing too, I'll say, this is, I know actresses. So many actresses struggle with the idea. I'm not telling people to have children because that's such a personal experience, but we struggle so much with, oh God, what if I do? And then it takes me out of work or it changed the way I look. It looks like my daughter like lit fireworks off inside my body and then came out spread eagle, just tearing at the contours of my body until I just became like the Michelin man. But thanks, Freya. But we worry so much about how it's gonna, but this job is actually so cool for being a parent because there is so much downtime. So you do get, but then, you know, then you have a kid and you're working on a network series for 59 weeks of the year and you never see them, but they'll be able to go to college. So that's good too. But
the give and take.
Yeah.
But before you had your daughter, what did you do when you were in the, and even if it wasn't productive, I'm just curious how you kept yourself going.
The little things like, you know, whether or not I audition enough or the auditions, like the feedback, I used to write a lot more. My brain was more tuned and I had a little, but you know, like I had a schedule set for writing and meeting with people. I know in the early days I'd fill my time. I performed at the UCB theater and I would be doing shows with my Herald team and rehearsals and then rehearsals and shows with my independent group where we would perform. That filled up so much time and it felt like it was like I was putting that, like investing towards my goals.
Yeah, it's productive.
Yeah, that felt very productive. And like being in sketch shows I also had like an acting coach that I would work with. And so like all of that felt like my day was filled.
Yeah.
And then to the point where I was like, I'm exhausted. And then when I came out here, this is such a different and isolating city.
I agree.
It's weird because a lot of us are here for the same reason. But it's not like I think because it's New York, there's so much, you're always schlepping. Like you go to Trader Joe's on, for me at least, I would go to Trader Joe's on 14th.
Oh, I've heard it's a bit of a nightmare.
Oh my God.
I've heard the line is out the door.
The line is out the door. There's a person standing with a flag that you have to find, and then there's people shopping while still online, but they're not moving.
That makes me understand why everyone in New York goes out to eat for 100% of their meals.
Or we're all fighting each other. Get the fuck out of my fucking way. Like, it's like, I'm sorry, could you just please select what sushi you want and move forward in the line? But yeah, it's just, so you're shopping on 14th Street and then taking two trains to get back. I lived in Greenpoint and like taking two trains. That was, but here it's like, oh God, I got to put clothing on and then like get into my car and drive. It's, fuck it. You know, and then it can drive you home I think, you know, Rob Hubel, I think Rob Hubel's so fun and funny and awesome and like he's so hilarious, but then he's in movies like The Descendants, like he's so good, he's got such range, that guy. But he said, and this is true, I'm name dropping,
love it
guys, I'm friends with Rob Hubel very close, he calls never, but anyway,
who calls?
He gave no one, who psychopaths call,
yeah,
lunatics.
My college card recently asked for money and I was like
what?
Yeah, Missouri State University.
Oh, wait, I thought you said a friend from college asked.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They love to call and ask for money.
How dare they?
Like, by the way, they go, are you working in your chosen field that you study? And I'm like, yes, I'm an actor. And they're like, okay, would you like to donate? And I'm like, I think you missed that. I'm an actor.
Oh.
I'm going to run that back.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to charge you for this phone call. But he said something, he was like, it's going to take you a couple years to get used to Los Angeles. And I was like, a couple years. And he also said it can be very isolating. And so I was prepped for that. And it is. And I also, if left to my own devices, would spend my entire life in not a cave, because I'm claustrophobic and I don't I would get grossed out. But like I could spend my entire time in a well-ventilated area.
Open air.
Yeah, an open air. Like a gazebo. Alone. Because I can just spend so much time by myself. I'm an only child and I have a wild imagination. And so it can be very hard for me to remember. But now that I have a daughter, I kind of force myself to socialize so that she doesn't end up like me. So my parents are both lone wolves, so like I was just raised
Interesting. And now you put on performances
for people. Well, I don't know this, you didn't ask this, but I'll just force you to know this. I think I've figured out how to overcome being incredibly shy, is that like performing is a way of creating a bit of a barrier. So, you know, I can make jokes, but I'm crumbling inside. No, but I just did it.
That was it.
I made a joke, so I didn't have to go through the deep part. But I think that's a great shield, because, you know, but then pair that with the fact that I'm an oversharer and all bets are off.
Well, I enjoy it. I want to talk to you real quick about Barry, because I love the show. I love you in it.
Thank
it's
you.
Perfect. How is working? How did that audition process go?
Oh,
and then, like, how is working with that set? Because, like, I think it's such a good show, and I think so many actors really like it too.
Oh, I get such nice compliments and feedback because of being on Barry. I was like a huge fan of. I mean, Barry is so good. It's so smart. It's written so well.
When I first saw the advertisements for it, I was like, that looks dumb.
Was it because of the serial killer or because the actor?
Because he was a killer. But I was like, but he's funny.
I don't even know.
He's funny and he's supposed to be a serial killer actor. And I'm like, that's never going to track. Watched one episode. Could literally watch it all the time.
It's so good. The acting is so good. So I was a nerd. I was like a nerdy fan, and when I got an audition for Barry, I was like,
you were in the first season.
I'd seen it. I wasn't on the first season. No, I was on the second season.
Oh, I guess you were in the first season.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess I watched them so close together.
Well, that's, yeah, but you, who knows?
Oh, gosh.
And I know, as a sidebar, when you binge a television show, it's your life. Then 5 seconds after you finish, you're like, wait, was it Game of Thrones or Game of Bones? I can't remember. It's like, it's your everything you live and die for. And the second it's over, you're like,
Which explains why as actors, we get really, really high and then like completely low. Because the second anything's over, you're like, and what next?
I'm out of a job.
And I'm
I have nothing to live for. Oh, I have an audition tomorrow. Yay! You know, yeah, it's great. But I auditioned for it and I was... I afterwards, I was like, can I just have this job? I was joking. But then I got a call back and I got to meet Alec and Bill. And I went to the wrong place.
Oh, stop.
And sat in the waiting room for over half an hour. Just kind of like...
Was it one of those things where they changed the callback location from the initial location? Yes.
But anyone who can read at a like a third grade level could have read in their email that was very clearly marked, there's a location change.
So were you late?
I was very late.
Oh, fuck.
But I walked in and Bill was like, don't worry about it. I'm an actor. I've done the same exact thing. And I was like, please don't think that I'm a flake. Or that I, like, don't know how to be a human adult. Or that I was, like, doing a power move or whatever. I was like, they're going to... I drove from the first place to the second place screaming at the top of my lungs, like, fuck, I got... Like, and no one... All cars I wanted, like, zapped off the earth so that I could just, like, shoot directly. I
can feel it in my... that kind of, like, self-frustration where you just took it on everyone
else. Yeah, everyone else is shit. Not because you didn't read your whole goddamn email. But they were very cool, and they were so supportive, and Bill kind of talked me through before, and...
That's really cool.
It was so cool. It's exciting, and... It's scary because I truly want, like, there's some that I'm just like, oh, well, we'll see what happens. But this I truly wanted because it's so good. And I love, well, Bill Hader's body of work is so cool. I mean, it's so funny, too, because anytime you turn on anything, he's in it right now. And I'm good with that because I think he's so talented and he's so consistently good. And he works his butt off. And Alec, he's written for like sign. He's so consistently good, and together they're such a good pair. And it's like, it's such, I'm so happy because they selected me and then starting on that show, the cast of that show is so welcoming. And like, it's like being led into like a family party that you're, you know, like, you know, when you meet your person's family and they like you, as opposed to like you meet and they're like, I get that. It's just like being led into a great party and like being welcomed immediately. I didn't feel like
it. Well, especially on a season two, right? Like the relationships were established. People had inside jokes. Like walking into someone else's house is a weird feeling.
Well, and too, like with the acting class, they're this group, but they like welcomed me immediately into the group. Like can I talk about a cause for interesting?
Yeah, absolutely.
I right before I started, there's this incredible,
what paid her.
But I hosted a cause for entertainment that year, and
involved with Jessica Sherman, who's done this podcast.
Oh, she is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well chosen. And it's if I may, it's this great force that has a night of like glittery fun and it raises money for two grassroots charities. I actually posted the first year that I was raising money for breast cancer, and someone was like, why would you raise money for breast cancer? And I was like, oh, I mean, research and awareness of breast. And it's been actually instrumental in me doing breast checks and finding things early that are not going to kill me. But it's I'm so excited to have been a part of it. So thank you.
That's amazing.
But as a result of I don't know if it was because they'd invited him earlier, but Anthony Carrigan, who plays NoHo Hank, was at, I actually met him at the first, at a Cause for Entertainment. I met this man that I was going to work with. He's so lovely. He donated money. It's just, they're such cool people on the show. I think that's, has a lot to do with why the show is good. It's written well, it's acted well, and there's no bozos.
God, that makes me so happy to hear that it's great on the inside too.
Yeah.
Did you like freak out when you got the call? Like I would have been.
I screamed into Bill Hader's ear.
Oh, he called you?
He sent me a text and said, "Can you give me a call?" And I was like, "Oh boy!"
But did you have his number already?
No, I did not. Someone must have given him my number.
And you were like, "Bill Hader is texting."
Yes. Well, truly, because I'm Sarah Burns, I thought, "Oh fuck, I didn't do a good job." I'm sure they're going to take time out of their writing day to call me to tell me to go fuck myself.
People love to text and procedure to proceed to call someone when they don't do a good job.
Hey, are you available? I need to call you and tell you why you can eat some dog shit today. Like, that's what I honestly thought. I'm not even joking. My boyfriend was home and was like, but I was like, oh God, I didn't do a good job. I think they're maybe going to give me notes and maybe they're going to let me come back in.
Okay.
That's what I thought. And he gave me the news and I screamed in his ear. I was so excited. And my boyfriend was in the kitchen and I heard him say like, "Atta girl." Or no, I didn't hear him say that. I'm lying. That's a lie. He told me. My senses at that point were all firing at their highest ability, and I could hear and smell and taste everything for an entire square mile around. No, he told me that he was like, "Atta girl." But that's, it was very exciting.
So cool.
And then knowing me, I went and cleaned kitty litter. Like, just...
Because you got to live your life.
Yeah, you got to clean up after those cats.
Yeah, and dogs and children and...
All of the animals.
Responsibilities.
Yeah.
What do you wish people knew before they moved to L.A. or as they start in their acting career?
Oh, definitely wear sunscreen. I wish I had started early. Oh, I haven't even bought them yet, but they're in my Amazon cart. UV gloves for driving.
I'm buying some.
Yes, smart.
I spend a lot of time in my car.
Yeah, I like, you see people that are covered and you're like, okay, crazy, but that's smart. I mean, I don't want to see what these hands look like under some sort of UV. I mean, like, I would say sunscreen, UV protective clothing. I think, too, my parents gave me this sign when I had made the move from leaving my day job to doing this full time, which they were not very happy with, because I think they were like, oh, you'll be back on the payroll soon enough, I'm sure. But they were like, trust your crazy ideas. So I would say, and then my friend Evie, she worked, Evie Franceschini, she worked in the camera department as, please, I hope I get it right. I think she was second AC. She's second AC. And she decided to kind of trust her crazy ideas and go pursue her true passion of acting. And, you know, that's frightening. And I gave her my sign. I was like, one day you'll give someone this sign. So, like, I think if you're going to move to LA, like, trust your crazy ideas, but don't, like, hope it's going to fall on your lap, like, because it's, there's so many laps out there, you know, like, mm-hmm. Everyone wants this. But I would, on a positive note, I would say, like, trust your crazy ideas, work your ass off, trust your crazy ideas and trust your gut. If something's wrong, you tell the bars and I'll get the fuck, like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
One time I told someone right before I walked into an audition, "Oh, would you do me a favor and go fuck yourself today?" And then as I was walking into the room, I was like, oh my God, what if that person is sitting across from me as I walk? So I would say, okay, trust your crazy ideas, wear sunscreen and protective clothing, and do not ask anyone to go fuck themselves later in the day if you are about to walk into an audition.
That's a lot of inspirational quotes from one lady. I like it. I like it a lot. Sarah, you're so funny. This is fun.
Yay.
Do you want to direct anyone to anything, anywhere, anything you're working on?
I think this is going to air before anything I'm in comes out.
Okay. It'll probably be like December, January.
I would say, guys, you know, just
enjoy the holidays.
Great.
I will be starring in a one-woman show on Broadway about a headless torso called Me, Myself, and I. I'm just kidding.
No.
Everyone in this room just got really excited.
I've been very quiet, but for that one, I'm going to ask
questions. I used to do Paul F. Tompkins' podcast, Spontanea Nation, and whenever I didn't have something coming up, I would
just lie.
Tell people that I was going to be in a one-woman show on Broadway called About a Headless Torso. And because I thought it was so funny. And I figured I would just say it every time. And eventually, like, someone would think it was funny. Like, I was just entertaining myself. I hope no one ever believed me.
Somebody
did
it.
Wait a second.
I
don't get it. I've been on Broadway.com every week. I can't get those tickets. It must be such a hot commodity.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. This is hilarious. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're a
Thanks
doll.
For having me.
Of course.
I talked like an insane person rambling.
No.
And that's what I want.
No, you kept me from talking too much, which is when this podcast goes south. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I'll talk to you in just a bit. And that brings us to the end of today's podcast. Sarah Burns, thank you so much for your time and your candor. You are absolutely fucking hilarious, and I hope that we can have a drink together soon. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you to the three of you that are going to leave a review this week that's going to take us over 100 reviews. I can't wait to say your names out loud. I'm so pumped. Please review this podcast. We are also brought to you by We Audition, weaudition.com, code BROKE25 for 25% off your membership. This podcast is created and hosted by moi, Sam Valentine, with production help from Laurel Canyon Creative and Cecilia Tripp. And of course, our music is provided by Maggie Zabo. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week.